This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level, Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your look Ceruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a crispy and crunchy, hey, look, a squirrel, to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Michael W. Dean and Randy England?
Yes.
Can you feel it?
You bet, Lou.
Sarah, ha 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 ha.
Good morning.
And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Yeah. So, do people like to ban things? Why do people like to ban things?
A hero of mine, Sergeant Dan Banning, spoke quite a bit about this. And yeah, I remember his words the first time I met him. On your knees, you dirty hippie, on your knees!
Well, I like what his cousin Ban Banning said, or is that his brother? Yeah, his brother Ban Banning said, Banning should be banned. I agree.
Definitely. As a matter of fact,
it should be ignored.
When you and I met for the first time at Porkfest, Michael, as I walked up to you, I said, on your knees, you dirty hippie. And I had the longer hair between the two of us, so.
Yep.
Strange,
you
huh?
Still did. Now you got a beard. I've never had a beard. I had a beard for 1 month in my life, and I did not like it. And it was itchy. I guess you get past the itchy if you keep it long enough, huh?
Yeah. My beard is, it's not quite Ben Stone yet, but I could start singing Sharp Dressed Man pretty soon.
Yeah. Randy, do you ever have a beard?
Well, I have a bit of one now.
Oh, I can't see you. My
camera's turned off. You know, I'm probably not going to let it get shaggy. I don't think I could bear it.
Mine's almost ready for dreadlocks.
So, the reason we're talking about banning is somebody wants to ban something, surprisingly. Wow, you do have a little beard there, Randy. I'm looking at a picture of you. That looks great. That's good, man.
Well, thank you.
So, yeah.
I'll keep it there.
There's this app called Sarah Ha 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 Ha. How do you say it, Lou?
Sarah Ha Ha.
Is that really how you say it? That sounds like a good punk rock chick name.
Sarah Ha Ha.
Yeah.
Sarah Ha.
That's how I say it. That's how I say it.
Yeah. So it's an app that allows people to review things anonymously. And some mother in Australia has a petition to get it banned. Not to say, you know, my daughter doesn't want to use it, but to get it banned because someone used it to bully her daughter and say that she was such a bee and it said, she makes everyone hurt and I hope she kills herself. Seriously, no one would care. So because of that, the mother wants to ban this, and there are 420,000 signatures. Now, I'm wondering, too, if the girl, I don't want to say if she deserved it, but if she's completely innocent, because the message that was sent said that she makes everyone hurt. Maybe she's a bully, and this is an app people use to report bullies, and the mother doesn't like that, or thinks her daughter's an angel. You know, you could actually use the app Cell 411 to prevent bullying. It's an app that we like. You like how I threw that ad in the middle here? So this is an app, Cell 411. It's free. Download it, and you can use it to contact people and send them your GPS coordinates. It'd be great. I keep thinking it'd be great for a kid that's bullied, that's in a school, who has an older brother or sister in the same school. Because then they could, you know, call and jump in and protect him. Or, you know, the parents could just pay some older bully kid to beat up the bullies for their kid when they sell 411 them. But you guys ever use it for that?
No, I haven't.
I could use that, but I don't get out much, so it's not a real problem.
You don't get out much, or I don't get out much?
No, I don't. I'm retired, and I go out during the day and get what I need, and then I run back home.
Squirrels?
You know?
That's what Ben Stone does now. He feeds squirrels.
I haven't started having coffee with the old man at McDonald's, but, you know.
Is that a thing?
It is a thing in a lot of places. My dad does it, so I can't see it at this point.
So what time does this happen? I'm usually probably not up.
I think it's up. It happens when I'm still asleep too.
Like what time?
Like 7 o'clock in the morning.
Do they call each other on cell 411 to meet, or this just happens spontaneously all across the world?
Everything I'm saying is hearsay because I've never seen it happen. But I think
you're not,
that they
you're
do.
Not, you're not an old man, so you don't know. You're not in their club.
No, not I'm not that old.
So, what? Let's talk. Let's go around the room and talk about what people could do. Have nonviolent communication about conflict resolution. What could this mother do other than demanding that no one be able to use this app?
Raise a daughter
that's not
a bee. That
raise a daughter that's not a bee. Yeah.
From my experience of this, I have friends that have used it, and what they do is they sign up for it, and they put their email address into it and set up whatever the account is. And then they'll post it on Facebook and say, okay, tell me what your first impression of me was, or tell me what you think of me. Don't tell me who it is. Let me guess. Whatever it is. And laughs were had, and everything was fine. And then for some reason, this... Perhaps this girl set one up, and it turns out that, this bee set one up, and it turned out that people thought she was a bee, much to her surprise. And I don't really know. I really don't know where this came from, but I'm not really sure why it needs to be banned. Probably because the mother is a fool.
How I found out about this was a friend of mine was pushing the petition to get people to ban it. I was shocked. A former friend of mine, this guy, Paul Kirk, also known as Bean, who played in that band Slish with me back in the day in San Francisco. And I was looking at his Facebook the other day, and he was like, everyone should sign this. And I was like, I blocked him. I didn't respond. But
well, is this problem, the bullying thing? When did you guys, have bullies when you were kids in school?
And there weren't apps, and they could do it anonymously. They just write it on a piece of paper and stick it in your locker. Maybe they should ban teaching reading and writing. Then people couldn't bully each other. Well, they could still just beat each other up.
They couldn't do it anonymously, though.
Yeah, that's why...
We had analog bullying before the digital age came around.
Like what?
Instead of posting something on somebody's wall on Facebook, they'd actually post something on a brick wall with spray paint.
On a wall. Yeah.
I posted on my wall that you're a jerk. The paint's not dry yet.
Do you think, though, it's a bigger problem now with the phones and that?
No, I think it's just easier and quicker. And I think that the reaction is easier to spread. I think that's the problem. I got to say, too, people wonder why I don't play in bands anymore. It's because most musicians are busybodies. Like, that guy is indicative of most people I've played music with. Most people that are good musicians are leftists. I think it's because musicians kind of play, like they want to make a living doing something that's basically play. It's called playing an instrument. Like, you want to play like a child all day. So you have a stunted view of the world and what it owes you. And think it owes you something, and think it owes you, protection. Although it's kind of interesting, too, because a lot of musicians, including this guy, spend a lot of their life trying to shock the world and trying to challenge propriety. And then when something happens, what happens, too, is they have kids. Like, this guy had a kid. So now, we must think of the children, literally. I think that's what happens. It's square, man. People are square.
Yes, think of the children. Raise better children.
Yeah, think of the... No, somebody else should think of their children. They don't want to think of their own children, even if their children are bees.
Still has it on her phone or not?
That guy Paul Kirk's house burned down in those California wildfires recently. I'm not going to be too mean to him, but I'm not going to say anything. All right, so, I don't know. I think people should raise better people. Raise better people that don't need this. Here's the thing, too. Did the girl have the app or did her friend have the app? Like, if she had the app to receive this message, then she volunteered and signed up to see what people say about her. If someone told her about it, she had to look at it to confirm it. So she had a part in this because, really, she could just not know it was there if she wanted to not know it was there. Here's what the lady says. I have been scared, broken, and sick to my stomach ever since I read a message about my 13-year-old kid saying, I hope she kills herself. People told me that when I was a kid all the time. You should kill yourself. Did they? Which is probably not that common, but, you know, I was the weird kid. Did people tell you guys you should kill yourself when you were 13?
I didn't have that happen.
I was confident family members. Mostly family members. Wow. Yeah.
yeah, more likely. Wow. I was the oldest child, so there was a lot of abuse that I did not have to bear.
Yeah. Yep.
Because I was giving it out, not taking it. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Lou. I'm done with this topic.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So speaking of people that want to ban things. A bunch of ranchislators in Wyoming, which are rancher legislators. We call them ranchislators. That was a name created by a Wyoming legislator, Gerald Gay, who's actually homophobic, ironically, and also doesn't like Arabs, but can speak Arabic, which is interesting because he worked there. He worked over there. What'd you say about this app, Lou, Sarah? Haha. So leftists want to ban it because it can spread. Oh, the name means truth. It means truth and transparency. So I guess liberals want to ban it.
In Arabic.
In Arabic, yeah. And then you said the conservatives want to ban it. Why? You were joking?
Liberals want to ban it for being truth, and conservatives want to ban it for being Arabic.
Yeah, that's funny. So, yeah, the ranchislators. They want to ban... There's a bill in Wyoming right now to insist that all privately sold computers here have porn-blocking software to block adult porn from being seen by adults. We'll be back after this trip to the market.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Yep. Yeah. All right. So, So Wyoming legislators want to ban, they want to require that all computers sold in the state have a software block, a device to block viewing websites that have pornography. Now, they also say, or facilitate prostitution or contain child pornography. So they're talking about pornography between consenting adults being viewed by consenting adults. They want to make it so if you sell a computer in this state, it has to have something to block that. And there will be penalties for selling a computer that doesn't block that. And you will, if you're over 18, you will be able to request in writing and get a permission slip to not have that on your computer. Basically, they want to have a registrar of people who like pornography. Here's my thoughts about the unintended consequences of this. First of all, I think it's possible that computer selling companies will quit selling computers here. Second of all, there's an exception for privately sold computers. I think all computer sales would go into the black market. I think people would be smuggling them over the border from Colorado, hidden inside bales of marijuana. And I think that this will help destroy the economy of Wyoming, which is pretty fragile because it's still recovering from the hit it took from the price of oil going down. There's also another bill currently by some hipper ranch legislators than this, including Tyler Lindholm, who's a good guy, who want to decriminalize cryptocurrencies here. So Wyoming is one of two states, along with New York. I think there might be, I think Hawaii now too, but there might be another state. But no cryptocurrency exchanges operate in Wyoming. I've actually never used a cryptocurrency exchange because you can't use one here in Wyoming and buy with a credit card. You know, if you try to do it with a credit card in Wyoming, it says, we don't do business with you, basically. So they're trying to get rid of that and make this state more friendly for cryptocurrency companies, which I think would be a great thing because Wyoming is starting to get a little bit of a tech industry because it's got cheap land, cheap electricity, and it's not hot. So it's a great place to put server farms, and that's starting to happen a little bit here. But I think that if this bill passes, or even if it gets out, like, for instance, us talking about this on national radio, if this gets out that this is the kind of climate, political climate in Wyoming, I think that internet companies and that have nothing to do with porn are going to want nothing to do with Wyoming because they're going to think, man, those people are square busybodies. And really, anybody that would be in favor of this law is a square busybody. My theory is that, actually, this is my wife's theory, is that this was put through by, this was forced to be put through, to put on the table by some hen-pecking wife of one of these ranch leaders. You know, like, oh, maybe he got, maybe one of these guys got caught looking at porn, and his wife said, you have to ban this. Let's read the names of these people. I'm going to look that up while, Randy, you're a former attorney. Give us your opinion on this.
Well, you know, one thing that I thought was interesting in the bill, do you have any, are there any manufacturers of computers, people that make them and sell them all over the place?
They make big, heavy things of iron here, like guns and wind turbines.
Because this applies to, if Dell Computer or Apple was in Wyoming, every computer they sold on the whole earth would have to have this blocking software.
Really? Is that how it works?
If you're a manufacturer or a distributor, yeah.
Then this will keep tech companies from coming to Wyoming, not just because they don't want to be around square people, but because it would seriously interfere with their ability to do interstate commerce, which is interesting because the FBI's mission statement of why they exist is to protect interstate commerce and we know that it often doesn't do that, but even more so, you know, these Wyoming ranch leaders are ostensibly claiming to be small government Republicans who believe in the free market, but they're doing everything to stop the free market. They also passed an internet tax illegally. It was voted upon by the ranch leaders actually voted against it 3 years in a row. And so the governor just called up Amazon and said, all right, start charging a tax and send the money to me. And anything that you buy on Amazon, like some things are taxed, some aren't. Anything, if the company also has a physical presence in Wyoming, then you have to pay tax on it.
If internet is porn is banned, it'll just be made in the bathtub by somebody. I won't worry about it.
Yeah. And it'll be stronger and cheaper and more powerful and everywhere.
It'll kill you.
Yeah.
Say, Michael.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
You know you want to be a filmmaker. As Rick of Rick and Morty says, school's not a place for smart people. Nowhere is this more true than film school. Don't waste years and $100,000 being taught by those who couldn't make it. Just get a camera and a $7 Kindle version of $30 Film School 3rd Edition. $30 Film School 3rd Edition is the recent update on the classic 2003 book that helped spark the do-it-yourself filmmaking revolution. Written by DIY filmmaker Michael W. Dean, whose high-quality, low-budget movies star Academy Award winners and nominees, get worldwide distribution, and have been in many respected film festivals. The first two editions sold over 100,000 copies, and it's recommended reading in many colleges. The book is back, updated for today's high-def consumer cameras, but still has the same self-starter ethic and tips that no other book has. Get it delivered this minute to your Kindle or phone for only $7. Go to Amazon and type in $30 Film School 3rd Edition. That's $30 Film School 3rd Edition.
right back. Michael Dean has gone to take his little cat nap so he could take his kitties to the vet tomorrow. Or whatever it is that he's going to do. But anyway, so Randy and I are going to pick up where I left off last week. Last week, for those of you that did not hear it, and you should probably go back and check out the episode later on, and the title of it is Breaking the Law with Bastiat. So we're going to pick up where I left off last week. And this week we're going to talk about, and the title of the show is going to be Bastiat Part 2, The Law Breaks You. And the thing about Frederick Bastiat in the law is he comes from the classical liberal position, or the classical liberal school of thought of the law is meant to protect life, liberty, and property. And if only the right people could be in charge, and if only the law did only what it was meant to do, if only the law protected. But the reality is, the law has not been used for protection. It has been used for plunder. So what are your thoughts on that, Randy? What did you get? Because you did listen to last week's episode. What did you get out of that?
Well, well, first of all, he talks about, you know, the purpose of government, like you said, is protecting the life, liberty, and property of citizens from theft or aggression. And that's not exactly the way a modern-day libertarian would put it. A lot of people prefer to just say there are no rights except property rights. But I think he's really saying about the same thing. Depending on how you come at that, your life, of course, is your property. And your property, well, of course, is your property. And your liberty is like messing with your property, which is you. And that's your arms and legs and things you say. So I think he's talking about protecting the exact same things as modern libertarians, you know, talk about protecting property rights, you know, sort of in a Hoppian way or a Stephen Kinsella way. And so he gets it. I mean, this guy, he was born in 1801. He died, 1850, 49 years old, lived before all of those later anarchists, you know, Benjamin Tucker and the later, well, Lysander Spooner, I think he overlapped a bit. But he came up with all these ideas without the background that all these later guys had or what we have. And it makes him just this amazing, amazing character, how much he figured out how bad the government is in interfering. He wasn't perfect in the sense that he didn't develop everything that modern libertarians, if he was with Murray Rothbard, Murray would have to maybe he is with Murray Rothbard, I don't know, would have to
maybe now, you know, he is
straighten him out on a few things. But what's amazing with him is not what he may have gotten a bit wrong, and we could talk about a few what those are. He was kind of wanting the, what do they call it, the night watchman state. He was okay with that. But on the rest of it, I mean, it was just amazing to how much he got and how effective he was. I mean, he really, his respect for government was very low. He had such a contempt for the French government and the legislators and all of that, that you just read it and you go, this is great stuff.
Yeah.
You talked about the broken window fallacy. You talked about that last week?
Well, that's in a separate writing. That is in what's seen and what's unseen.
And that was really important.
But I did mention it because I wanted to highlight some of his other writings.
It seems like, well, in his book, What is Seen and What is Not Seen, he goes through, I think, a whole lot of different examples. There must be 10 short chapters in that book, where the first one is the broken window fallacy. The basic idea always behind his examples in that book, at any rate, is the idea that destruction, whether it's a natural disaster or it's it will give you cash for your clunker. Was that 2009? Maybe we had that.
Something like
mere
that.
Destruction of property does not stimulate the economy. And the broken window fallacy, of course, was the fellow who had the, was it the shoemaker? His son broke the window, and he had to pay the glazier 6 francs to replace the window. And some idiot, or lots of idiots, you know, who gathered outside the store, said, well, it's an ill wind that blows nobody good, and at least the glazier can feed his family. So this was okay. This was a good thing. You know, it's a good thing for Hurricane Katrina to come in and create, you know, $5 billion worth of damage or something like that. And people still believe that sort of thing today, and he demolishes it.
Well, bad ideas won't die. That's a problem. And if broken windows created prosperity, then Detroit would be lined with gold in the streets.
No kidding.
So, a little recap on this. Bastiat lived from 1801 to 1850. He was a writer. He didn't really start writing until later on in life, but he studied economics, political science, philosophy, a lot of different things. Very
well. All self-taught, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think he went off to school for some of it.
Oh, yeah, I mean as an adult. He didn't go off to college. I think he wanted to go off to Paris to study, and ended up getting stuck in the family farm or something.
Well, after his grandfather had passed away, I believe that's when he went and got his education. So he started a little bit late. I think that was at age 24, but and he didn't start writing until the 1840s. But anyway, and he was also a member of the lower house in the French government. I can't remember exactly what it was called. So he
I think
was
it was just at the county level, just like a county commission or something.
He got in there a little bit earlier. Later on, he got into the lower house of the national government.
Right, yeah. He was just a justice of the peace, too, if I recall.
Yeah, I think that was his first political posting. But anyway, very well-rounded guy, very well thought out, very articulate. My problem with him is that he doesn't end this book or any of his other books with saying, you know what, it is the nature of government to grow and to consume more, and this whole notion of classical liberalism and statism is nothing but utopian fantasy.
That's where he doesn't get to that point.
Right, and there's so many that don't.
Well, as I was saying earlier, I think it's a far less of a shortcoming for him, and he died young, too. Who knows where he would have been 10 years later. But
especially if he'd had Facebook.
For you and I to be minarchist is unforgivable. But for Bastia to be a minarchist and have an already thrown out... he really throws out every function of government except... protection of lives and property, right? Whether it would be on a defense level, you know, national defense level, or protecting against criminals, you know, in the street or whatever. That's really the only thing that he proposes for government to do. And I thought it was interesting that the only thing he proposes for government to do is something that could easily be done without government.
Yeah. Yeah, and the whole thing about life, liberty, and property, and I'm pretty sure I said this last week. Thomas Jefferson had said that a government strong enough to give you everything that you want, and we're going to go into the plunder portion of it later on, but a government strong enough to give you everything that you want is also strong enough to take it all away. If that is the case, then it's also reasonable that a government that is strong enough to pretend your life, liberty, and property is also strong enough to take it all away or violate the living daylights out of it. And I'm pretty sure that the track record shows, it, especially from the time of Bastiat until now, is that has been the case. It's not just a couple isolated incidents here and there. It has been the modus operandi of government since the beginning of government. You know, back in the days when the governors or priests or whatever what they were the they were gods on earth, and then when they started dying, they found out that they're not gods, and they became God's chosen representatives on earth, all the way to the modern day where you have idiots talking about how God told them to run for office and become president.
Yeah, well, when he was born, I mean, the French king was not but 10 years dead, right? If that. And I agree with you completely. It's very attractive. The one thing that he did allow for, obviously, if he would allow for defense, either on an individual level or on a collective level, then he would have to allow for the coercive taxation of the public as the one coercion, the one aggression or theft from the population in general. I don't see any other way. And he doesn't say that, but it's has to be there. If he's going to have a government at all that can protect me, he's going to have to rob me first.
Yeah, in the very beginning of the law, he does talk about the right of collective force, of people joining together and creating a protection of life, liberty, and property. So that's always what the assumption is of government, that people join together and they said, in order for our society to be successful, we have to protect life, liberty, and property. Therefore, governments are instituted among men, blah, 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 blah.
But that's
the theory for it.
No, but it's absolutely true. I agree that we have the right to collective defense. My complaint is not the collectiveness of it, as long as I'm voluntarily a member of that collective. It's the coercive aspect of it.
Right. So what he says in here is, if every man has the right of defending, even by force, his person, his liberty, and his property, a number of men have the right to combine together to extend, to organize a common force, to provide regularly for this defense. Collective right, then, has its principle, its reason for existing, its lawfulness, its individual right, and the common force cannot rationally have any other end or any other mission than that of isolated forces for which it is substituted. So he goes along with that, but the reality of it is it goes off a horribly different direction. We'll be back.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Biptunia, music for the drive to Alpha Centauri. Biptunia's influences are Gary Numan, Brian Eno, Pink Floyd, David Bowie, Led Zeppelin, Grateful Dead, Frank Zappa, Robert Fripp, Blondie, Kraftwerk, and Dead Kennedys. Biptunia styles are trip-hop, rock, pop, glam, industrial, ambient, jazz, and space. Plus, it's got cats and is covered by the BIPCOT NoGov license. You can download Biptunia's music free. Go to biptunia.com. That's BIPTUNIA. Bravo, India, Papa, Tango, Uniform, November, India, Alpha. Biptunia.com.
We're talking about Bastiat, part two, The Law Breaks You. And I think I closed out last week's show before I got bounced for technical issues with a couple lines here. And I'm going to repeat them because it's going to lead into the topic of tonight. It would be impossible, therefore, to introduce into society a greater change and a greater evil than this. The conversion of the law into an instrument of plunder. What would be the consequences of such a perversion? It would require volumes to describe them all. We must content ourselves with pointing out the most striking. In the first place, it would efface from everybody's conscience the distinction between justice and injustice. No society can exist unless the laws are respected to a certain degree. But the safest way to make them respected is to make them respectable. When law and morality are in contradiction to each other, the citizen finds himself in the cruel alternative of either losing his moral sense or of losing his respect for the law. Two evils of equal magnitude, between which it would be difficult to choose. And I believe that I said last week that it's an easy choice, that my respect for myself always, always outweighs my respect for the words scribbled on paper. Maybe because the words scribbled on paper are not respectable. What say you?
Well, now the one thing that Bastiat was not the first person to say what you just said was he's basically saying that an unjust law is not a law at all, or at least he's saying that an unjust law will not get any respect from the people. And it seems to me that if you have laws that people consider unjust, they will throw out, you know, what's the phrase, the baby with the bathwater. They would mm-hmm. be tempted to throw out the laws that were perfectly just, the ones that you'd had to obey since kindergarten. But the source is corrupt because it creates so many unjust laws. I mean, the notion that an unjust law is no law at all, it goes back in history. I don't think it started back in the 400s with St. Augustine, but he wrote that very thing. And other people have said that through time. St. Thomas Aquinas said exactly the same thing and went so far as to say it was all right to kill the unjust ruler. It's that bad that the law would be used that way.
Didn't Jesus say to, sell your cloak, buy a sword, and render unto Caesar what belongs to Caesar?
I don't think those were all in the same incident, though.
That's the condensed version. Yeah, Martin Luther King had said, one has a moral right to disobey unjust laws. Jefferson took a step further, and he said, if a law is unjust, a man is not only right to disobey it, he is obligated to do so. To which I respond, don't tell me what to do. But I can kind of agree with that, because there's nothing that does more to get rid of bad laws than blatantly disobeying them in a flagrant manner, letting the rulers know that you refuse to be ruled in this regard. Now, there's numerous stories that go back through history, the judges in the Bible, and there's if you hear about Zier law or polycentric law through Africa, and I don't know if it's called Zier all through Africa, but I know in Somaliland it's called Zier. That you have these judges, and their whole purpose is to settle disputes between individuals, between clans, whatever. And this works out. People go to see these judges, and these judges are respected. Therefore, their rulings are accepted and respected and followed. But the big thing of these is they ask two main questions. First question being, who is the victim? And the following question is, how has the victim been harmed? What demonstrable harm has been followed? If you do not have a victim, if you don't have demonstrable harm, then you don't really have a dispute.
We got to pick this up in the next hour, Lou.
We do. We will. We'll be back.
The central scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Oh, the intro? Yeah, go ahead, if you like.
This This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2018 in the Alpha Centauri region. And this is Randy England, and I'm here with Lou Sander. And I also wanted to let you know that the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT, no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. Hey, Lou.
Hey. Before we get back into Bastiat, I want to make a little announcement. Registration is open, and this is for credit card and debit card payments. The cryptocurrency isn't open just yet, but registration is open for the 6th Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, which will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan, just outside of Kalamazoo, from Thursday, June 21st through Monday, June 25th. You can meet really awesome people there, like Randy England and Nick Hazelton. Murder Dog Jeremy Hengler might be there. Jeremy Hamburglar. Scheduled speakers include Dana Martin, Brett Bonat, Prof. CJ, and Scott Horton. And there's a couple others that have been listed. I think Jim Cunningham will be coming back. He's been a speaker at Liberty Fest before, and also Pork Fest. He spoke about Milgram and the Stanford Prison Experiment. Who else is in there? Luis Fernando Mises. So, yeah, a couple big names, a couple smaller names, but it's going to be a pretty darn good event.
C.J. Kilmer, he has the Dangerous History podcast. He's the history professor from Florida, very interesting last time. Did I get that right?
Yeah, Florida man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yes, he's Florida man.
And a good guy. He made it a point to hang out with everybody throughout the entire fest 2 years ago, I think it was. And a good fella, and gave a real interesting talk. So I'm really excited about him coming. And Scott Horton. Oh wow, there's nobody that knows more about foreign policy and military and the U.S. defense department than Scott Horton, is there? Who wouldn't lie to you about it? I mean,
he's definitely up there. I mean, as far as knowledgeable, I mean, the guy's he's a computer of his own. The way he just rattles this stuff off, it's amazing to listen to him. And you throw a little curveball at him, and he just readjusts and says, you know, hey, let me pull back into my memory banks and pull that out, and then boom, starts going.
Yeah, if I want to research any particular topic, I go back and start with his podcast on that particular thing, and that's the place to go. And as you said, there'll be a few Freedom Fiends, both frequent hosts and even some more obscure ones like yours truly.
Yeah, meet awesome fiends like you, Nick, Murder Dog, me.
I wonder if Ben Stone might be coming up.
You never know. That would be nice.
That would be exciting. Well,
maybe even Diana Kyler. Maybe even a Katzenlaufen.
Diana from Colorado, she didn't make it last year.
No.
She was missed. But that would be great. I enjoy, it's the only place I have where I can actually get together with the Freedom Fiends, because even though with using Fiend Phone, most of the time you sound like you're in the same room, we're not. You know, we're all over the place. And, you know, you and I, Lou, are probably about as close close to one another as we are to anyone else in the whole system. Daryl is, he's in Hawaii, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it would take forever to drive to Hawaii.
I have so much envy for him because he gets to do the show at 8 o'clock in the evening.
Is it even that late for him?
I think it's 8.
Yeah,
which is 4 hours earlier than it is here in the Midwest.
Yeah, I think he does a little bit earlier than that. But anyway, so
whatever time it is there, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. So, but everybody, come to the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest because it's a great time.
Yes, June 21st or June 25th. Registration is open for FRN type payments. So anyway, back to Bastiat. It is so much in the nature of law to support justice that in the minds of the masses, they are one and the same. There is in all of us a strong disposition to regard what is lawful as legitimate, so much so that many falsely derive all justice from law. It is sufficient, then, for the law to order and sanction plunder, that it may appear to many consciences just and sacred. Slavery, protection, and monopoly find defenders not only in those who profit by them, but in those who suffer by them. If you suggest a doubt as to the morality of these institutions, it is said directly, you are a dangerous innovator, a utopian, a theorist, a despiser of the laws. You would shake the basis upon which society rests. Here in modern America, you'd be called an extremist for advocating for too much freedom because humans are unable to handle freedom. Therefore, they need other humans to control their freedom. But it's very interesting with what I opened up with, where it talks about people equating the law and morality. If that is the case, then Rosa Parks belonged at the back of the bus because that's what the law said. The Jews belonged in the prison camps in Germany because that was what the law said. The slaves belonged on the plantation, and Harriet Tubman should have been hanged by the neck because she violated the law. Not just the law, but the supreme law of the land, the Constitution of the United States, where under U.S. law, the fugitive slave laws were birthed. So if that is the case, if that is the law, then as far as I'm concerned, the law be damned.
All of the most pervasive evils are always enshrined in the law for the government. You know, they like to talk about how horrible, you know, the white supremacists or the Aryan nation or the crying Nazis or whatever they may be, as these kind of kooks that are out there, but segregation and the marriage laws and those sorts of things, those are all racist enactments of law that came about, you know, early 20th century or before. And all of these enshrined in the law in the South, where you couldn't eat at a certain lunch counter or use a certain bathroom if you were the wrong color. It didn't matter that there were probably lots of store owners or gas station owners who might have let you use whatever bathroom you wanted, but except they'd go to jail themselves if they allowed you to do that. And it's the law that takes an evil that some people hold, and if they're powerful enough people, everybody now holds that evil. And of course, the things that the military does when it comes to killing people, mostly, you know, overseas, but not only that, I mean, governments kill their own people at rates that make guys like Ted Bundy and John Wayne Gacy look like rank amateurs. Those guys, they're when it comes to killing, they're just bushing because yeah. the government is excels in every evil.
And as Murray Rothbard had written, I believe it was in Anatomy of the State, if we are the government, then everything that is done to us, we are doing to ourselves. So the slaves put themselves back on the plantation. Rosa Parks put herself in the back of the bus. The people in Waco didn't get murdered. They committed suicide. I saw a comment earlier today. I can't remember where I saw it, so I can't give proper attribution. But it talked about the jury system. And the question was, would there be a jury system in a stateless society? Because if you look at the present situation of the jury, you have people that are conscripted by the government to go in and do the government's dirty work. They've gone to a government school, where they've been indoctrinated, and they're probably of the mind from that indoctrination that that which is legal is also moral and legitimate, as Basiat explained there. And by having them render the guilty verdict by following the instructions of the judge, it is as if the people are punishing themselves.
They're supposed to be deciding, but they're rubber stamping, you're saying.
Right, right. And if you look at, and this is, if you look at jury nullification, one of the big uproars against it is that people are not following the law. They're choosing to interpret. And with jury nullification, the common man is being a check on government power versus the rubber stamp like you had just mentioned. Now, here's something else. With the jury system, when they get the instruction from the judge about what the law is and from the prosecutor, isn't that a lot like the Milgram experiment where people are being told to, okay, well, go run the electricity through this person because they did wrong?
Well, it's really true, because when a jury gets a jury instruction, they are ordered as to what they must do. It won't say, you can't just say guilty or not guilty. What they do is they set out the elements of the offense. Say it was a DWI case. They would say, if you find this person drove a vehicle, for, number one, drove a motor vehicle on a highway, and number two, did so while intoxicated, then it says, then you will find him guilty. So it doesn't leave open anything like, if you find this and this to be true, but you think the law sucks, you can find him not guilty. It directs you absolutely that if two facts are true, you must find him guilty. That's what the whole jury nullification thing is about, being allowed to tell the jury that you must find these two things before you can find him guilty. But in fact, you can find him anything you want, including not guilty. Now, if they said that, it would be fair. At least that part of it would be fair and true.
And if it had the standard that I talked about before, about the judges or the deciders asking two questions: is there a victim, and how was the victim harmed?
Then we didn't come back to that. We're going to have to come back to that.
Let's do that. We'll be back. And we'll come back to it.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone. It allows you to set up public and private cells for dealing with crime, emergencies, setting up neighborhood watch, activism, and even protecting your kids from bullies on the street or at school. Cell 411 gives your cells turn-by-turn directions to your location with one touch on your phone. There is also a Bluetooth panic button available that can be worn on your wrist, belt, or around your neck. Cell 411 has real-time chat for each alert, so you can discuss the incident with family or friends in real-time video streaming. The video is stored on Cell 411's servers, so your evidence cannot be deleted if your phone is taken or destroyed. Cell 411 has decentralized ride sharing that allows for payment in any form: crypto, barter, silver, cash, etc. Cell 411 does not take a cut of your fare. Get Cell 411 free on Google Play and the iTunes Store, or go to getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.
Freedom Fiends. And we are back. Lou and Randy.
Hey, Lou.
Basiat Part 2, The Law Breaks You. So you wanted to talk a little bit more about something that we discussed in the last segment.
Let's see. What was that? No, you made just a really good point, and I'm now trying to remember what that was. But it just escapes me. You said it, and I said, that's good.
It was the part about looking at the old judges, the old timey people that settle disputes, looking at the dispute, asking, okay, who was the victim and how was the victim harmed?
Yeah. And that, of course, I mean, is not a part of the modern legal system, because half of the laws have no victim. Or I should say all of the laws have an official victim, which is the state. And the person who was actually harmed is, it might be in the case as a witness. That's about it.
Well, the state, and this goes back to Rothbard, and I believe it's Anatomy of the State again. The state always treats crimes against itself more severely than it does crimes against the general population. Ultimately, every victimless crime is a crime against the state because it's disobedience. But if you look, I think Rothbard even used this example. If you look at the effort put in to find a cop killer, it even surpasses an abducted child.
Well, that's really true. Wasn't there a fella, some sheriff that was on? I just saw the other day. I guess it was a YouTube about the sheriff. His men were chasing the fella whose license had been revoked or suspended. So he's driving without a license, and his men, the sheriff wanted him stopped, and he's on the radio.
Oh God, I heard about this.
Yeah, wanted him stopped. He was on the radio, and so they start to come up to try and run him off the road, and they're damaging their cars, and the sheriff tells them, "Don't be messing up my cars, just kill him." And of course, they do. Well, they run him off the road, and then they kill him. And the sheriff, he shows up at the scene. And the cop that killed the guy, apparently by this point he's repented of what he did and feels real bad about killing a guy for driving without a license. But the sheriff tells him, don't worry about it. It's nothing. I told you to do that. Don't worry. I got your back, and you'll get over it. And then later when he's not talking to the guy, he basically suggests that he's a wuss, and if he can't handle, you know, having to kill people, he needs to get out of the business. And then he just gloating over the whole situation. He says, "I just love this humor, you know." And it was just unbelievable that there are people like this, but he can't be the only one. It's pretty amazing. And the thing that's so horrible about those kinds of cases, too, is that this fellow wasn't doing anything before they started chasing him. And a cop that has any common sense in his pointy little head knows that you don't need to escalate a driving while revoked into an execution. And the sheriff now is maintaining that this guy was endangering other people. Of course, it was a low-speed chase. It wasn't fast. And it wouldn't even have been 40 or 50 miles an hour that it was if they weren't chasing the guy. And at some point, you would think, and I know that a lot of cops do this, I've had plenty of cops tell me that they gave up a chase because it was dangerous. There were other people that could have been hurt, and they said it wasn't worth it. I think they knew who the guy was. And that's where cops often know who the person is that they're chasing, which means they can get them any time they want. This isn't like their last chance, and yet they do it. And this guy, like I said, they shot him, and I believe they shot him after they ran him off the road. And it seems like it was just sort of out of, your point, the disrespect.
But it's the law. He's violating the law. The law says you have to do, if we allow this, then what else do we allow? Do we allow murder, child pornography, blah, 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 blah?
Well,
and that's the argumentum absurdum or reductio, stupid argument. So I can't remember the proper Latin for it, but it's a stupid argument.
Reductio ad absurdum.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed.
but they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
And go on the sidebar of the Freedom Fiend site. We now have Amazon links for Amazon US, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada due to popular demand. Worms.
Freedom Fiends. Plunder may be only an exceptional blemish in the legislation of a people, and in this case, the best thing that can be done is, without so many speeches and lamentations, to do away with it as soon as possible, notwithstanding the clamors of interested parties. But how is it to be distinguished? Very easily. See whether the law takes from some persons that which belongs to them to give to others what does not belong to them. See whether the law performs, for the profit of one citizen and to the injury of others, an act which this citizen cannot perform without committing a crime.
He says it so well. Isn't Bastiat the one who also said, the state is the great fictitious entity by which everyone seeks to live at the expense of everyone else?
Yes. Yeah, the great fiction. I believe it was nails technically it. The government is a great fiction. But he said, everybody wants to live at the expense of the state. The state lives at the expense of everybody. And what he talks about also in the law is, well, as far as plunder goes, and it's really interesting that he points this out. See whether the law performs for the profit of one citizen and to the injury of others an act which the citizen cannot perform without committing a crime. So in other words, if the common man acted like the government, he would be a criminal and locked in a cage. At the very least, he would be chased from his neighborhood with torches and pitchforks and possibly shotguns. But once you put the mantle of government on a person, they can get away with all sorts of criminal activity.
I don't know of anyone before Bastiat who made that argument that you were just making. The idea that you cannot delegate to a group or to a government a right that you do not possess. So if you don't have the right to go break into your neighbor's house, stop him from gambling or smoking marijuana or whatever, if you don't have the right to do that, then you can't all elect somebody sheriff to go in and do it either. You cannot have a collective right that exceeds your individual rights. I've never heard that from anyone before Bastiat.
I'm not aware of it either. And that logic also extends to, you cannot appoint representatives to approve or to write and approve a constitution and then force everybody else to live by it. I mean, Spooner had spoken about that that no man could be a party to a contract to which he did not sign it. He did not have an opportunity to accept or reject it. He didn't have an opportunity to counteroffer or any of this other stuff. But through the power of magic, constitutions are legitimate and they form a social contract which everybody is bound to, whether it's like Rousseau's social contract that doesn't even exist.
Well, of course, you could have representatives to come together and create this agreement, but in the end, no one can really be bound by it unless you've agreed to it.
And if they're your representatives, then you can say no, and you can also fire them.
Well,
because they work for you, right?
But I mean, once they've finished and said, here's your constitution, we could all sign on it, you know, and be held
but
to
anyway,
it.
So what Bastiat writes about in the law is he talks about two different types of plunder, extra legal and legal. Extra legal is just straight up street robbery, theft like that. But the legal plunder is using the law not as an instrument of protection of life, liberty, and property, but as an instrument of plunder to take from those to whom it belongs and give to those to whom it doesn't belong. So when he talks about socialism, he talks about this big giant trough that people believe is seemingly endless. It's a bottomless trough, and it gets filled up. And by some strange miracle, the trough just keeps getting filled and filled and refilled, and it never goes empty. And people become pigs, and they feed at the trough, this public trough, and because they know that it's going to come to an end, they have a tendency to gorge themselves and, you know, try and get as much as they can. They turn it into a buffet.
This idea that you're really no different than a criminal if you take these rights upon yourself, it actually does go back, and it goes back, I was just thinking now, at least to Alexander the Great, and you have the story of the pirate who apparently was pillaging the high seas and Alexander's ships and things like that, and the pirate had been seized and was brought before Alexander the Great, and the king asked him what he thought he was doing, you know, taking hostile possession of the sea and robbing ships, and the pirate, you know, stuck his chest out and said, "What do you mean by seizing the whole earth? But because I do it with a petty ship, I'm called a robber, while you do it with a great fleet and are styled an emperor." And I think it's the same idea. So it goes back and back, and who knows how far back it goes before Alexander the Great. This is an idea that the truth of it, you know, is just undeniable. And it doesn't say in the story, the accounting that I've read, what happened to the pirate, but you can guess, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a fine line between pirate ship and Navy ship. I think it depends upon
the not a very medals. Fine line.
Yeah, it depends upon the number of medals on the chest of each captain,
each pirate,
and which flag that they fly. But yeah, so the extra legal and the legal plunder. So the piracy versus the in the case of cops, road piracy. But the discussion that he has in here is about socialism. It's not the modern socialism that you and I would recognize, the state socialism of the Soviet Union, where the means of production are owned by the state and or owned by the people with the state managing it on their behalf, or owned by the state itself, which is the same thing. One's a euphemism to make people feel like they're not as enslaved as they are. But they're talking about the ways to get rid of this socialism. And the socialism that they talk about is the welfare system, also the political connections, the protective tariffs.
The protective laws are the big thing with him, I think.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
biggest,
yeah,
probably.
The economic affirmative action of propping up those that are the least qualified to stay in business. But there's a lot of discussion on how to get rid of the socialism. And this is what has taken place. The delusions of the day is to enrich all classes at the expense of each other, is to generalize plunder under pretense of organizing it. Now legal plunder may be exercised in an infinite multitude of ways. Hence come an infinite multitudes of plans for organization, terrorists, protection, perquisites, gratuities, encouragements, progressive taxation, gratuitous instruction, right to labor, right to profit, right to wages, right to assistance, right to instruments of labor, gratuity of credit, etc., etc. And as all these plans taken as a whole, which with what they have in common, legal plunder, which takes the name of socialism. But how is it that Monsieur Montalembert, my disclosure last time is I'm going to butcher French words, does not see that he is placing himself in a vicious circle? You would oppose law to socialism, but it's the law which socialism invokes. It aspires to legal, not extra-legal plunder. It is of the law itself, like monopolists of all kinds, that it wants to make an instrument, and when once it has the law on its side, how will you be able to turn the law against it? How will you place it under the power of your tribunals, your gendarmes, or your prisons? What will you do then? You wish to prevent it from taking any part in the making of laws. You would keep it outside the legislative palace. In this case, you will not succeed. I venture to prophesy, so long as legal plunder is the basis of the legislation within. It is absolutely necessary that this question of legal plunder should be determined, and there are only three solutions of it. One, when the few plunder the many. Two, when everybody plunders everybody else. Or three, when nobody plunders anybody.
Heaven forbid.
And strangely enough, if you advocate for number three, you are an extremist, an innovator, a utopian, a lunatic. So which do you think we presently see in the current USSA situation? Which one of those? I'll give you a clue. It's not number three. So you have a 50-50
shot of getting
it right.
Well, you know, you put a good face on it and say that everybody plunders everybody else, but that's really not true. There are definitely those that are pulling the wagon and those that are riding in it. And it's interesting, the word socialism, he uses the word socialism, doesn't he, throughout
yes.
his works. And the meaning of it, it gets a little dicey now that we're after the whole, you know, communism thing and that, and again, it gets mixed up with communism, because I think the Communist Manifesto was written in about 1848 or something. So this is right when, I mean, it was out and available to Bastiat when he was writing most of his most well-known works, and yet he's not talking about it as communism. He's talking about it as more what you're saying, the idea that everyone's plundering everyone else. Or what was number one again?
The few plunder the many. Number
the
two
few
was
plunder
when,
the many.
When everybody plunders everybody else.
Yeah, I think we've got a mix between one and two, I think.
I think that ultimately it's number two, but it's going to be different situations. If you look at excise taxes and tariffs, if you purchase goods, you're paying those. So even the dirt poor, the poorest of the poor that are purchasing things, they're paying excise taxes and tariffs because these things are rolled into the price of the goods. So nobody's escaping that. It doesn't matter if you're wealthy or the bottom of the barrel poor. Everybody's getting stuck with that.
You don't think, though, that somehow the ones that are making the laws are maybe getting more than their share of the plunder? I wonder.
I would say that they are. When you look at the wealthy using the tariffs to divert business to them from something else, it's a big giant mess, and it turns into the trough that we're talking about. We'll be back.
Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is Michael W. Dean's novel from the year 2000. It's entirely fictional.
Allegedly.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is a glorious story about a low-rent post-punk rock star, Cash Newman. Cash Newman is entirely made up.
Not a guarantee.
And is not based on any particular person.
Not a guarantee.
Cash Newman has lots of fun with strange ladies and with the party favors.
Don't try this at home.
And he hangs out with people who commit three felonies a page.
But that's none of my business.
It's all in good fun. And at the same time, it's kind of deep. But always spunky. Michael recently updated the book to a much better version. He released it as a paperback, and for the first time, on Kindle. As with this and all Freedom Fiends-related things, please rate and review. Get Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women now on Amazon or at michaelwdean.com.
For entertainment purposes only.
Beans. Sounds like you got a new Wampus Cat bump there.
My Wampus Cat was sick for a while, but he's feeling fine now.
It does sound a little bit different. So, anyway.
Well, you're never the same after you've had the flu, you know. Even if you had the shot for it and you still got it.
So, we're going to wrap up this Bastiat and the Law Breaks You. And we're talking about socialism and this big, giant public trough where everything is thrown in together and everybody attempts to live at the expense of everybody else. As a result of its beliefs and of its efforts, it would seem that socialism, notwithstanding all its self-complacency, can scarcely help perceiving the monster of legal plunder. But what does it do? It distinguishes it cleverly from others, and even from itself, under the seductive names of fraternity, solidarity, organization, association. And because we do not ask so much of at the hands of the law, because we only ask it for justice, it supposes that we reject fraternity, solidarity, organization, and association, and they brand us with the name of individualists. Eek! We can assure them that we repudiate, or we can assure them what we repudiate is not natural organization, but forced organization. It is not free association, but the forms of association which they could impose upon us. It's not spontaneous fraternity, but legal fraternity. It is not providential solidarity, but artificial solidarity, which is only an unjust displacement of responsibility. Socialism, like the old policy from which it emanates, confounds government and society. And so every time we object to a thing being done by government, it concludes that we object to it being done at all. We disapprove of education by the state, then we are against education altogether. We object to a state religion, then we would have no religion at all. We object to an equality which is brought about by the state, and then we are against equality, etc., etc. They might as well accuse us of wishing men not to eat because we object to the cultivation of corn by the state. And how many times have you seen compulsion euphemistically recharacterized as compassion?
Yeah, if you object to the government making shoes, that means you oppose people wearing shoes.
You want everybody to be barefoot. And you're chauvinist because you probably want 52% of them to be pregnant while they're barefoot.
But 52? But this, is that what it is now? The number is growing.
Give or take. But yeah, I can't even count how many times I've heard somebody say, well, if you object to welfare, you must hate poor people. You want them to die in the streets. And
you want
it's
them
just
to starve.
Absolutely ridiculous, the thought process of these people. And I use the word thought processes very loosely.
There is no thought process because they never come to the question of, you know, who are you going to steal it from?
Yeah, it's difficult to use reason on people that have come to their conclusions without reason in the first place. So the big thing about this is everybody has this assumption that it has to be this way, that there's no way that people can organize on their own, that you can have a voluntary fraternity. It must be coerced. And I don't believe this is human nature. I believe this is something that's been conditioned and indoctrinated into people. But you constantly hear people saying, but we have to have organizers. We have to have government. We need to have these people telling us what to do. It's as if they believe that the world would stop spinning and everything would come to a screeching halt if you did not have a Obama or a Trump, a Nancy Pelosi or a Paul Ryan, a Harry Reid or a Mitch McConnell barking orders at you, telling you what to do. And to that, I can only say, if the natural tendencies of mankind are so bad that it is not safe to permit people to be free, how is it that the tendencies of these organizers are always good? Do not the legislators and their appointed agents also belong to the human race?
Lou, I'll leave you with my favorite quote from Mr. Bastiat. He said, "The state has no resources of its own. It has nothing. It possesses nothing that it did not take." He gets it.
He does. If he lived long enough to get on Facebook, he'd be an anarchist. Thanks for coming out tonight, Randy. Thanks for helping me finish out the Bastiat
series. Thank you for having me, Lou.
thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks to everybody that gave me nice messages about last week's show. For more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com.
Worms.
Good night.